incarnate teachers and incarnation. Wherever his name is spoken, that very place is holy. How much more so is the man who speaks his name, and with what veneration ought we to approach that man, out of whom comes to us spiritual truth? Such great teachers of spiritual truth are indeed very few in number in this world, but the world is never altogether without them. They are always the fairest flowers of human life. Ahetuka daya sindhu, the ocean of mercy without any motive. Acharyam mam vijaniyar, know the Guru to be me, says Sri Krishna in the Bhagavata. The moment the world is absolutely bereft of these, it becomes a hideous hell and hastens on to its destruction. Higher and nobler than all ordinary ones are another set of teachers, the avatars of Ishvara in the world. They can transmit spirituality with a touch, even with a mere wish. The lowest and the most degraded characters become in 1 second saints at their command. They are the teachers of all teachers, the highest manifestations of God through man. We cannot see God except through them. We cannot help worship them, and indeed they are the only ones whom we are bound to worship. No man can really see God except through these human manifestations. If we try to see God otherwise, we make for ourselves a hideous caricature of Him and believe the caricature to be no worse than the original. There is a story of an ignorant man who was asked to make an image of the god Shiva, and who, after days of hard struggle, manufactured only the image of a monkey. So, whenever we try to think of God as He is in His absolute perfection, we invariably meet with the most miserable failure, because as long as we are men, we cannot conceive Him as anything higher than man. The time will come when we shall transcend our human nature and know Him as He is. But as long as we are, we must worship Him in man and as man. Talk as you may, try as you may, you cannot think of God except as a man. You may deliver great intellectual discourses on God and on all things under the sun, become great rationalists and prove to your satisfaction that all these accounts of avatars of God as man are nonsense. But let us come for a moment to practical common sense. What is there behind this kind of remarkable intellect? Zero. Nothing. Simply so much froth. When next you hear a man delivering a great intellectual lecture against this worship of the avatars of God, get out of him and ask what his idea of God is, what he understands by omnipotence, omnipresence, and similar terms beyond the spelling of the words. He really means nothing by them. He cannot formulate as their meaning any idea unaffected by his own human nature. He is no better off in this matter than the man in the street who has not read a single book. That man in the street, however, is quiet and does not disturb the peace of the world, while this big talk creates disturbance and misery among mankind. Religion is, after all, realization, and we must make the sharpest distinction between talk and intuitive experience. What we experience in the depths of our souls is realization. Nothing indeed is so uncommon as common sense in regard to this matter. By our present constitution, we are limited and bound to see God as man. If, for instance, the buffaloes want to worship God, they will, in keeping with their own nature, see him as a huge buffalo. If a fish wants to worship God, it will have to form an idea of him as a big fish. A man has to think of him as man. And these various conceptions are not due to morbidly active imagination. Man, the buffalo, and the fish all may be supposed to represent so many different vessels, so to say. All these vessels go to the sea of God to get filled with water, each according to its own shape and capacity. In the man, the water takes the shape of man, in the buffalo, the shape of a buffalo, and in the fish, the shape of a fish. In each of these vessels, there is the same water of the sea of God. When men see him, they see him as man, and the animals, if they have any conception of God at all, must see him as animal, each according to its own ideal. So, we cannot help seeing God as man, and therefore we are bound to worship him as man. There is no other way. Two kinds of men do not worship God as man: the human brute who has no religion, and the Paramahamsa who has risen beyond all the weaknesses of humanity and has transcended the limits of his own human nature. To him, all nature has become his own self. He alone can worship God as he is. Here too, as in all other cases, the two extremes meet: the extreme of ignorance and the extreme of knowledge. Neither of these go through acts of worship. The human brute does not worship because of his ignorance, and the Jivan Muktas, free souls, do not worship because they have realized God in themselves. Being between these two poles of existence, if anyone tells you that he is not going to worship God as man, take kindly care of that man. He is, not to use any harsher term, an irresponsible talker. His religion is for unsound and empty brains. God understands human failings and becomes man to do good to humanity. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuttanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkrutam dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Whenever virtue subsides and wickedness prevails, I manifest myself to establish virtue, to destroy evil, to save the good. I come from yuga to yuga. Avajananti mamudha manushim tanumashitam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Fools deride me who have assumed the human form without knowing my real nature as the Lord of the universe. Such is Sri Krishna's declaration in the Gita on incarnation. When a huge tidal wave comes, says Bhagavan Sri Ramakrishna, all the little brooks and ditches become full to the brim without any effort or consciousness on their own part. So, when an incarnation comes, a tidal wave of spirituality breaks upon the world, and people feel spirituality almost full in the air.